For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
All right. Welcome inside another edition of Mic Drop here, made possible by the Believe Network and available everywhere you get your podcasts. I'm Mike Osti, as always. Can also give some thanks to Sirius XM, where you may hear many of our Believe platform shows, including Mic Drop. And of course, as I said, available everywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, TuneIn, Google Play, etc. On this edition of the show, we're going to have some fun. We're going to have some fun talking some sports, talking an area in Pittsburgh, in a region that my guest and I are both from, and he still holds near and dear to his heart, despite having moved away to maybe bigger and better things, you could say. Kind of took that journey that many have taken before from Pittsburgh to Los Angeles. We are going to be talking with Dave Damacek, who right now is host of the Minus 3 podcast and is a longtime television writer with credits of The Man Show, Crank Yankers, and several others to his name. I won't make him feel too old because when he was embarking on his professional career writing those shows, I was a kid watching them. So I was growing up watching some of those shows, which will date both of us. Also a former radio host with Fox Sports Radio. We're going to talk Tomlin, we're going to talk the Steelers QB situation. We may disagree there. We're going to talk a topic that he posed on his show, and that is who has the better all-time cup championship team, cup final team, Penguins or Oilers. Oilers right now taking part in the cup final, the Penguins not. But either way, which one stacks up more? I may even bring up another franchise that always gets forgotten in this that I think it actually could argue as having the best team. And then maybe we'll see where his excitement is on Paul Skeens and the new look Pirates, that there's more excitement, but they're not necessarily winning more. Nonetheless, Dave, how you doing, man? Happy to
have you. Go home, Mountaineers. Go home, Mountaineers. I used to chant that in Pitt Stadium when the Mountaineers would feel like they belonged on the same stage with the Golden Panthers. We'd have to send them home back to
where. Depends on what era you're talking about, whether they belonged.
Dude, whatever, wherever you come from, not my business. Just get out of town, would you please? What's up, dude?
What's going on, man? Yeah, we do have, I'm a WVU alum, of course, cover the program, Pitt fan, Dave Damacek. Nonetheless, though, we're not going to talk college football, though I got to have you back on probably around that time, because obviously we got a backyard brawl coming up, end of this era, and who will get bragging rights to be able to do more of that here before they
I got a lot on my plate because my alma mater, Indiana University, is on its way out to Los Angeles to play the UCLA Bruins. So I've got a lot on my college football plate this autumn. So
more opportunities now with the landscape shaking up that you're going to be able to experience them coming out there. That wouldn't have been a thing really in the past. But again, Dave Damacek, longtime TV writer, co-host right now of the Minus 3 podcast. That's a fun show. You definitely got to tune in and subscribe to them. I do want to start you off with a topic that right now has become news and is the perpetual, I feel, annoying debate that will always plague Steeler fans. They're never stopped with, even though it's pretty much solidified that Tomlin's going to stay on until he wants to leave his tenure as Steelers head coach. But they give him a three-year extension after last year. We talked about it all season long because that extra year, et cetera, was dangling out there. He's going to now clearly retire as Steelers head coach, no matter what they do on the field. I always knew that. It was kind of always out there. They've only had three head coaches in, you know, a half century plus for the franchise under the Rooney family. You've been following this franchise a long time as a fan and keeping close tabs. What's your perception of Mike Tomlin, and why do you think it's so polarizing? Because when this news came out, there were some fans that knew he was going to be around. They know this is going to happen, but they were legitimately mad. And we're going to have arguments about whether he should be fired if they lose a game this coming season, despite now a longer deal.
Well, Osti, I think that my answer may be unsatisfying because I'm going to attempt some nuance, and people don't like that. It should either be he sucks, dude, or he's the best, dude.
Right.
But I think the answer is closer to he's great. Not that he sucks or that, dude, he wants to be mediocre and all that. I mean, let's understand. It is a remarkable deed since he got there. This has been a long run now, and fits and starts and injuries to starting quarterbacks and otherwise along the way in the age of free agency.
Yeah.
Never having a losing season is remarkable stuff, period. The people who want to turn their nose at that and dismiss that are weirdos. Now, it is not a small matter that they haven't won a playoff game in, you know, what, 7 years now.
Yeah.
I also, though, can give
a
little bit of a break. If you start the timeline from the moment that his first ballot Hall of Fame quarterback hurts his elbow in that game, from that moment, everything gets turned on its ear. And, you know, you do have to kind of stop. The through line here is, so he keeps them head above water, playoff relevant every year, sometimes sneaking through. I find it hysterical that he has fully embraced the idea and may even through this upcoming season, the notion of trying to beat even the best teams or the worst teams, trying to beat everybody 12 to 11 every week is really
right.
First and through pro football.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that we all can see that the teams that thrive perpetually are the ones who have superhero quarterbacks. So I think he also understands that he doesn't have that. The extra layer to that is, even if he does have that, I think that's sort of the proven kryptonite, is management of the quarterback room, overall roster, motivation, coaching guys up, X's and O's, all of that, obviously high end from Tomlin and his staff. I do think the not small kryptonite potentially is the management of those quarterbacks. Witness Trubisky and how long Trubisky's, I mean, you can go back. Okay. You excuse Roethlisberger getting hurt and the Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even that you can make a little bit of a case. If you go way back to that season, that had Mason Rudolph not gotten hurt in that Jets game, maybe things track very differently going forward for that moment.
To be fair, if this current playoff format existed with the seven teams in both conferences, as we can debate Mason and Duck all day, but that year they would have got in. They were a game out. Right. No matter what went on and who was under center, it didn't matter. We're talking about a GQ model and a guy named Duck, and they were a game out and would have got in under this current format. Most people, if they lose a starting quarterback, are seven games out. But sure, everything else you said is true, too.
Well, and you know what? As a matter of fact, to go back to the multiple points I'm attempting to juggle here at one time, appreciate you bearing with me, Osti. I think that also the knock, I talk about the kryptonite of QB management, but if you go back to, I think the glaring, the two losses that you would circle, if you were a Tomlin cynic, you would say it's the loss at home to the Browns in the playoffs, and it's the loss to the Jaguars at home in the playoffs. Those are the two that you hold up and say, what went on there? How did the team come out that flat and get jumped on the level that they did? Twice over by teams that they should have beaten on their home field. That's a legit question to ask all these years later. But okay, so he gets through the Duck thing. I do think things maybe go a little bit differently if Mason Rudolph didn't get hurt there. I think he was going to rally them and beat the Jets. And who knows how the butterfly effect takes over the Steelers going forward if Rudolph rises up and pushes him into the playoffs. But okay, that doesn't happen. They bring back a damaged Roethlisberger, never, you know, all the cynicism around that. They get to the playoffs with a quarterback who, you know, really could literally just about not move from the spot where he caught the snap. And into the Trubisky, Pickett, Rudolph triumvirate.
Yeah.
I think it's a legit, you know, for all the great stuff that they were doing and squeezing out, like I say, these 12 to 11 wins against teams that they had no business playing with and actually leaving the field with a victory.
Right.
I do think that the big issue looming from last year and now into this coming season with a whole new quarterback room is we're trusting that the guys who made the decision, and largely it is Tomlin, and I'm sure Khan,
that's the thing. Like, he's the head coach, but he vocally said he was in love with Kenny Pickett. He admitted that he let Matt Canada linger. So if you're, as you said, if you're a cynic that says, well, Pickett didn't work, Matt Canada should have been fired earlier, we can't blame you for the end of Ben, but then you had other decisions that are on you. They clearly didn't work out. You're winning with 12 points, et cetera. It's not modern NFL. He's the head coach. He's not the owner. He's not the GM, but he's been vocal to admit these are decisions that either he supported, he was a driving force for, or he defended. So then you can fairly put them on him.
That's right. And I think the specific window that I find troubling as we then trust that they definitely have it on lockdown, who the right guy to put under center in week one, 2024 is going to be.
Yeah, we'll
this is
there.
The same group. I know, yeah. Arthur Smith comes in and there's some changes underneath, but let's keep in mind that Pickett, and I could get Kenny Pickett's frustration with Matt Canada is obscuring what he's capable of doing. That's the premise that everybody and their mother is saying in Pittsburgh last fall. Finally, Canada goes. There are at least glimmers. I think we overreacted a little bit to a team that had 3 points through three quarters in Cincinnati. But nevertheless, it did feel like, boy, this offense looks a little bit different with Canada out of the way here. Then the next week is the Cardinals game, and he gets hurt in that one. That game, they probably win. I'm going to stick my neck out and say they win that game if Pickett doesn't get hurt. But okay, he does. They put Trubisky in. He throws the game away. That coaching staff decides, yeah, we're going to run it back with him on Thursday Night Football against the Patriots. He puts that stinker out there for everybody to see. That same coaching staff says, yep, what other choice do we have? Not acknowledging Mason Rudolph is there on the bench. No, our best option is Mitchell Trubisky, who then goes to Indianapolis and throws that game away. And now with the season really on life support, I think most people assume that's that. Minka Fitzpatrick's hurt.
Mason leads him to the playoffs, but as you're kind of alluding to, it's hard to say that was a Tomlin decision because it's almost like he had no other choice to then go to Mason.
You couldn't go to Mitch at that point. Right. It's like over at that point.
Like, you and I would have made the same decision at that point. Like, it's not, that is not, you know, wizardry as a head coach or really sticking to a guy. You could maybe argue, some would maybe argue that it's also Tomlin. You have to give Tomlin somewhat credit to have, he stood behind Mason for a long time when others were against him. He was very unpopular amongst the fans. Tomlin defended him through off the field scandal to on the field play. That is also part of why a lot of players do like him, no matter what you think of him. He is the quintessential player's coach. Like, he will die for a player. He went on national shows that he vocally hates to defend Mason Rudolph because he believed in him. Those things go far with players, which is why I do think.
I think that's exactly right. That's exactly
that is why I do think, because I think why this conversation becomes so polarizing, aside from, as we know, the Pittsburgh fan sometimes goes off the rails. It's a passionate fan base. Every fan base does. There are a lot of former players in the national media. There are a lot of people that are in the national media that are either closeted or outward Steeler fans. So that those opinions are always out there. And the reason why they all defend Tomlin, even if he loses playoff games or underachieves maybe when he, you could argue, he had the best quarterback or one of the best quarterbacks in the game. He was already a Hall of Famer. Best running back who thought he was also a receiver. And at the time, the best receiver in the game who yet to get into drama. And they didn't win playoff games during that run. That's where you really can ding him. To defend him from all of that.
And the point is that both sides are valid.
Both sides are kind of valid.
Both accurate. And I also think that while I am a Tomlin supporter, I don't think it really makes a massive difference. I think it's a valid point to float out there, but I don't know that it carries the day for why you have to keep Mike Tomlin. Same thing as you hear with Pittsburgh Penguins fans saying they need to get rid of Mike Sullivan. The same standard applies here, which is that, you know, people will, the national defenders will say, like, if Tomlin left, he would get scooped up in 30 seconds.
That's what's always said, 100%. Yeah, players code, okay. Players love
also, messages again. Get stale. Peter Laviolette was out on the street and almost took the rags to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
You know, there are a number. Andy Reid is the example of that.
That is the example that I've even brought up before.
Okay, got stale, went somewhere else, picked right back up where he left off in another NFL town and have been playing.
And it worked out for both, though. Like Andy Reid he already had a Hall of Fame resume despite not winning a ring. They fire him. They really usher him out the door. They, you know, we'll celebrate you later, but we got to move on. Your voice is stale, etc. They end up winning a championship. He then ends up coaching a dynasty. They go to another one. You could argue that Eagles, Chiefs, it worked out for everybody. And that is what people will point to, that you can, quote unquote, fire or usher out the door or whatever, a Hall of Fame guy, still not do it in a jerk way, have it work for you, have it work for the other franchise, celebrate him 10 years later. I'm sure Andy Reid's going to be in the Eagles Ring of Honor. I'm sure they're going to bring him back. He'll be in both the Eagles and Chiefs. It can happen, and they did it the right way, and it's worked out for both parties. But the Steelers, as I opened, have three head coaches of so many, you know, of a half century plus. Tomlin had years where he missed the playoffs. They didn't fire him, even though fans wanted him fired then. Chuck Noll, after the 70s, was only in the playoffs a couple times in the 80s. There wasn't even a thought of firing him. They just don't do it. So,
well, but beyond that,
they like the consistency. And it's a different era now, though, because people want the knee jerk. Because you mentioned Peter Laviolette. It's the NHL always fires coaches every year, it seems like. You have one, you're coach of the year, and then you get fired the next year. But it's creeping to the NFL. I mean, in recent memory, NFL coaches are getting fired every year. They're getting 1 year crack at it. The Steelers like to pride themselves in, we're not going to do that. We're not going to be knee-jerk. We're going to look at the whole picture. We'd rather stick with a guy rather than have to learn a whole new system, etc. That's even why they kept Cannon extra year. They were open with this to the media that, we don't want to change with Pickett's coach only 1 year in. They like continuity to try to really figure it out and really give it its all. And honestly, that's why I've said if Penny Pickett did not get in his feelings, he'd still be there. They don't like getting
injured. I submit that Tomlin deep down brought in Russ as promised. I'm going to bring in some vet competition, show you how to do it in terms of like what happens in June. In these camps and how to comport yourself and how to lead people. I think that's what Tomlin wanted to show to his young QB. Out QBs, in fact, I think, you know, Rudolph, it seems, was on his way back there until the midnight surprise of Russ's arrival, all that mess, whatever. But yeah, I think you're right. Like where the head coach is concerned, where Cam Hayward is concerned, there are guys that, you know, that, I get that it's vexing to some who want to see an immediate change and shake things up because they feel it's time to do it. But it's that consistency and approach with the Steelers that is winsome to future. Like these people say, Dave, it's all about Cam's. Like everything you cite about why they got to sign Cam is all in the past, dude. But what's he going to do coming up? He's like, he's old and he's injury prone. It's like there are certain guys who establish what the Steelers culture is, and you don't let Cam Hayward walk out the door because it's an indication for all future free agents that we are not going to treat you like bad rubbish when we feel like the clock hits midnight on your prime. I know the Steelers have some history of that. Obviously I'm not.
They've done it before.
They have, but the message is it with that sort of consistency, it is, you know, it indicates to future guys how they're going to be treated. And that does matter. Obviously they're human beings just like any of us are. And which 100%. Environment you'd more want to be in is the one that feels secure where you're appreciated and all of that.
I do think the Steelers, Tomlin, the Rooney family, number one, they really do care about not having the losing season. It will be on some bus someday. They're going to put it in front of that thing. They really do care about that. I think there's several tenets that annoy Steeler fans as a kind of move off Tomlin here. Everything we're saying we know about the Steelers, and this is how they operate, which is why no matter what side of the coin anybody is, we all know they weren't going to fire him. Like maybe it was a little bit more real that he might have been annoyed with all of us. And I thought he might leave.
I thought legitimately he might walk.
Last year was the first year I could have seen him saying, I got to take a step back from coaching in general, maybe do TV for a year and then put his name back out there like Sean Payton did. I could see that because he was still young enough to coach again. But that was the first year I could see that. But even if that occurred, even if they were sick of him, We know how the Steelers would do this if they're sick of him. They would get in the room and say, Tomlin, we'd like to move on. We're not going to fire you. What do you want to do? They talk about it, and if he's hell-pressed on staying on, they would have kept him on. If he wants to maybe then move on, they would let him make the decision to keep his legacy sound. They would never actually have an article with a headline that could read, they fired him. It's just not how they do it. However, I think there are some fans, because we're in a modern culture here. It's a social media, every second is new news culture. What you're saying is true, but they've seen the dynasties. They've seen successful franchises. They've seen franchises that even if they don't win titles are more fun to watch and cover and absorb, do it differently than what we're saying the Steelers do. Like the Patriots for all those years, they got rid of a guy a year early to the point that they hated the franchise later on and would run them through the mud, but they kept on winning. They eventually fired a coach or ushered him out the door despite six rings. We mentioned the Andy Reid thing. Andy Reid was great, a Hall of Famer there, but they moved on and said, we got to have something else. The Steelers are winning games with 12, 13 points. The Dolphins, who didn't win a ring, they're scoring almost 30. That's at least exciting football. They're entertaining to watch. These teams who eventually find the QB that can take them somewhere, that allow you to have a chance, they have to suck for a year or two usually.
That's,
and they dip in and get the QB.
That's
the Steelers
the point,
will never do it. They want to have the winning season, so they're not going to be one or two or three or four in the draft.
You got it right, Osti. That's
the issue.
The heart of the issue. Talk about nuances, though. It's some difficult math equation to solve. That's what it all boils down to.
Yeah, the NFL
keeps winning. The resentment,
that's what it is.
Dude, it's not good enough to be mediocre and go 9-8 or 10-7 and sneak into the playoffs. It's like, that's as good as you can possibly do when you don't have in the quarterback league a high-end quarterback. That is achieving above your level when you're consistently at least chasing a playoff spot in the last week of the season.
Yeah, and you're
you don't have the man, but that's vexing to Steelers fans who are like, dude, it's not good enough to just get in. I want to be chasing the Lombardi in early February. I completely get it, but do you want them? Even if you're wired to like, dude, I don't care. I'll take a redshirt season on my Steelers this year. Right. If you are that guy, you're willing to watch them go 2-15. The Steelers ain't going to do that. So get that. Move on. Choose a different team. Go be a Browns fan.
You almost
and watch them go 0-16. The Steelers are not wired to ever lay down on that level. And TJ Watt, Cam Hayward, and otherwise are never going to participate in doing that.
Yeah. And that's exactly why they kept Mason in even at the end of last year, that they would rather crawl in and have no chance, because let's face it, in the recent postseasons, everybody knew they had no chance, no matter how much snow's there, where the game's played, they weren't going to win the game, than not be there. Like, they would rather have the playoff appearance to get in, be part of the dance, and then, of course, also keep that winning season alive. The players even have had it drained into them. Cam Hayward to say he doesn't want to be the leader of the team that loses the winning season streak. Like, they want that. That's all part of it now. And, yeah, they're never going to have a two-win season. Even the year they got a first-round QB that they believed in, and clearly it didn't work with Pickett, that was pick 20. He fell to them, and he was the only quarterback taken in that first round. That maybe you could certainly argue he wasn't really a first-round quality QB, but if he wasn't there at pick 20, they wouldn't have got one that year either. They're never going to be there at pick 4, 5, 6, 1, or 2.
Well, the asterisk next to that is, and that's what I think, that the notion that that's not a Steelers kind of philosophical move. Obviously, even Colbert, I mean, this thing about Khan does it differently than Colbert, and clearly he does. He's a different human being, and Colbert was different than Donahoe and so on. But Colbert was swinging for the fences a little bit. It didn't work out. Obviously,
towards the end of his career, he was
taking some swings there, but Khan's taking not even bigger swings. Yeah. And this idea that, like you just said, and I get it, that it's easy based on the draft board that the Steelers, if they're 9-8, let's say, they're never going to be in the top five picks, but of course you can trade up there. You can give up assets. You can give up future.
And
that spot. And that's if, I suspect.
And Colbert did it with Devin Bush, and then Devin Bush didn't work out. So like, as you're talking about, they did get a little bit aggressive. Colbert did. He brought the Minka trade to the table. Right. He traded up for Devin Bush. He didn't do that early in the tenure. Like, you could argue they sat on their laurels when they were a contender and winning a ring, and maybe that's why they only won one. And they, if say, I, again, I think some fans, like, you look at what the Chiefs have been doing, you lose one receiver, you still able to build differently, you win on defense, you have an elite QB, though, then you end up working a trade, getting another one in the draft. Look what the Patriots have done. You could argue the Steelers won a ring and they kind of sat back and said, we're not going to get aggressive. We got the title. Let's just chill.
I think what they did, actually, I thought.
But they had a lot of talent there at the time, too.
I think in the final, in the second decade of Roethlisberger, I think that Colbert got a little bit cute. I think that they lost their soul to some degree collectively in how they approached the draft, in that, you know, the Ravens have been pretty consistent about that, although they've kind of taken their foot off the gas in this regard in the last year or two, but which is, that's why Andy Weidel exists now back on the banks of the Three Rivers, is to get them back to their roots of building up at the line of scrimmage on both sides. And that's exactly what he's done. And that's going to be their strength going forward. Right. And I think in the last couple few years of Colbert, they were a little bit playing on the edges, a little bit on the fringes, trying to get some fancy pieces rather than solid, you know, interior, you know, unsexy, as they always say, but drafting Creed Humphrey when he was there in a couple of slots, those kinds of moves, you know, make big waves when they, you know, in the opposite effect. Like, if you get a guy like that, there are a couple spots where you can go back through drafts and what if it, and say, if, what if they had gone with this guy instead of that? But nevertheless, it comes back to the Steelers' unwillingness to ever fully tank out, to fully lay down. And so they're always going to be in the playoff mix. And so they're a victim of exactly that success. You know, they're just not naturally going to be, have like a spot to be like, Justin Herbert is there for us, let's take him. You know,
right?
And they're going to have to move up to do it.
Right. Dave Damachek, host of the -3 podcast, longtime TV writer, joining me here on Mic Drop with Believe, and available everywhere at your podcast, SiriusXM as well, as we just talked Tomlin. And I do think the NFL Films clip that's always out there about Chase Young, who was a top pick of Washington at the time and of course and has moved around, where Tomlin, you can hear him, Tomlin says to him, I'd love to have a player like you in the draft. I'm never going to be bad enough to take you. The paraphrasing. So that's Tomlin's career. That he's lucky, and I do think, similar to Sullivan, to compare, obviously you want to win a championship, you're never going to turn one down. When you win one, or in Sullivan's case two, and Tomlin did get to a second early on, that does set the standard that why are we not doing the same the next decade if you could win that quickly, as it's hard to do. So championship counts the same at the end of the day. When you go to the Hall of Fame, it's going to say Super Bowl champion, whether you win it your first year, second year, or your 15th year. However, look at the vibes of the culture. When you win it your 15th year, it gets treated as a big deal. You increased your legacy. You end up becoming a folk hero where they make movies after you. But if you win it early in your career and then never win it or get near it again, people forget that you even won the damn thing. And
I'd better to be that guy, because then you get to be this guy where you're saddled with the monkey on your back of never having
gotten. That's not on Tomlin, right? He did win one.
Right. You don't want that either. You don't want to be Steve Young, 100%. Like, oh my God, I got the albatross. Yeah. Better to be Roethlisberger in that sense. And by the way, that's practically the way you're going to get your Super Bowls.
Is generally speaking, early in the window. Sure.
Yeah. Your rookie window is when you're going to get them, even if you're a Hall of Fame quarterback. The vast majority of titles land in that, you know, 5 to 6 to 7 year window. You don't get to the soup. No rookie.
Outside of, you're talking Peyton and Brady, and Peyton's team was stacked. He wasn't even that good.
Even those guys, right.
After 27 years old, it's like two or three guys that won one, and they're all Hall of Famers. And I contend forever that Peyton's second ring, he wasn't even that good, but Brady obviously was.
I think he would tell you he was toted by
nine TDs, 17 picks. And yet, as I'm talking about perception, the second ring increases his legacy. Very smart people have moved him up in all-time ranks because of the second ring. As we're saying, he's had MVP years that are better than that when he didn't win.
Well, that's my hot take. I don't think Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, I'm not saying that there's no chance they'll ever get a ring, but I think those two combined,
this is the win.
Dan Marino. I think that both of those guys, given where they are in their careers, they're in the same conference as Patrick Mahomes and Mike McDaniel and Tua. and CJ Stroud. People do that thing in a real cavalier way of like, oh, well, there, you know, he'll get his like, will he? Because Patrick Mahomes,
yeah, nothing's guaranteed,
might be hurt, but CJ Stroud might fill that vacuum. By the way, you're completely ignoring the NFC side when you talk about, like, I think he'll get his, there's only one a year. They only give the Lombardi out to one team a year. So the math doesn't work out for everybody to get theirs.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's the whole thing. You could go to a Dak Prescott conversation with the Cowboys and et cetera. Yeah, when you get to a certain age, it's much harder. Windows are not as long as maybe in other sports. If you do get one, you have to look at how you're getting it. Are you getting it where you're still the same guy? Like, are you doing a Peyton Manning thing, or are you doing it when you're still the preeminent leader, dominant MVP candidate now, and would it feel the same? Those are the type of rings that usually happen, and the guys that maybe could embark on dynasties later, many reasons why other guys didn't get tons of them. Brady had a whole second Hall of Fame run, but that was a dynasty, and Mahomes could do the same. But are you
going to... Fran Tarkenton has zero. Was he not good? No, he was good. He just happened to be in... Yeah, that's the game people do, the prisoner of the moment thing, like poor Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. They have to go up against Mahomes. What are they supposed to do? I don't know. Poor Fran Tarkenton having to go past Roger Staubach and Terry Bradshaw and great Rams teams and so on. This is what happens. There's always good teams.
Yeah, and it's about the team. And Marino got to one early and then never even got near it again. It doesn't mean he was arguably a better player as his career went on, but his team couldn't get there because of different circumstances. Dave Damachek here joining me again on Mic Drop. To move off Tomlin, though, I do want to finish up with the Steelers on this. And you mentioned the last ride for Cam Hayward, possibly. Granted, he could re-up and be there longer, but there are some veterans that are in a little bit of a win-now mode. And you started off this offseason with something different that has not happened during the disappointing seasons of Tomlin, nor the overachieving seasons of Tomlin, where they didn't go anywhere either. Because I think we can all agree there's been years where Tomlin underachieved. There's years where he overachieved. That's kind of his legacy, even though it will someday put him in the Hall of Fame. But throughout that entire tenure, Art Rooney II never said anything. It was always a very, you know, we were right there. We believe in this guy. What we've been saying, we want to always be a contender. We never want to be so bad, etc. All those are always the comments. He started this offseason saying, I'm sick of losing playoff games. I know we got to win one. That is a different vibe. And once that vibe was set, they did change the QB room. And yeah, some of it they were forced into or it fell in their lap, etc. They're not even paying most of Russ's money. But point being, this offseason has been a lot more change than we're used to seeing from the Steelers in one offseason. So with all of that said, you have Russell Wilson versus Justin Fields, young versus old. I have always reported and said, from what I'm hearing, from when I'm there, just knowing, I think Russell's basically, as they're saying, in pole position, and I'd be shocked if he doesn't start week one. Who knows how that'll finish, though. Justin Fields may certainly see time this year. How do you see the QB battle? Do you think there is one? And do you notice a different vibe in the Steelers because of what Rooney said, that he's sick of winning playoff games? That even goes to, are they going to bring in a permanent and star wide receiver? That I don't think they will, but they're in rumors for Ayuk and others every day of the week. People in the know are reporting they're looking at this man. That would be an uncharacteristic Steeler thing to do as well, because then you're going to have to look at paying him and paying George Pickens in the future both. And one of them's gone. You're not paying both. You got Najee's contract hanging out there. It looks like they might be going all in for broke this year. That has not been the strategy, but is that the case?
Those vibes all check out as far as I'm concerned with what they want to do versus whether or not that's the reality. That's another conversation, but trying to work backwards with the point you made. Yes. I think it is downright foolish if they intend to roll into an NFL season with George Pickens, volatile. Let's keep in mind, that was real close. That was right on the edge to blowing up beyond the point of being able to retrieve it if you're the Steelers with George 100%. Pickens. That was right on the edge there. Okay, they drew him back in, a great Tomlin save specifically there, and he really was dynamite down the stretch, was Pickens. Yeah. Not in Buffalo, not in the playoff game, but still. Was
he had tons of talent there too, 100%. Yeah.
And you have a real solid traditional style pass catching tight end whose biggest issue, though, is health week in and week out. Those are your two viable pass catchers. Roman Wilson might be fine, but he's a rookie. That's not something that you would traditionally depend on. And by the way, that's not a big thing for Mike Tomlin. Let's lean on the rook. That's not a big thing that he's traditionally
right,
that's
right, right, right.
So he's that's like in the way. Veteran. So if they're trying to sell that. Yeah. And beyond that, you have cute stories like Calvin. I don't know what's going to be with Calvin. I have Van Jefferson. They have to get another pass catcher. But as it stands now, or even if they do get Ayuk, and I do think ultimately that that's the way it kind of has to go, is they're tracking with Arthur Smith. And you keep hearing about this Arthur Smith offense, but in the Arthur Smith offense, first of all, I don't love the idea of building a super specific offense or defense to suit what the coordinator needs. He's the coordinator. If he succeeds, he's going to leave. So chasing your tail kind of thing is strange to me. It's got to be an overarching sort of philosophy, not what this guy who just showed up 5 minutes ago needs for his offense to succeed. That said, I do think that the kryptonite, like I say, with Tomlin has been his read on NFL quarterbacks and what he can get out of his quarterback. So if Arthur Smith has a better handle on that specific assessment, then that's his value to the Steelers. Yeah. Either way, I they are now loaded up at the offensive line. They seem wired with two tight ends, neither of whom can catch, not Freiermuth. Those are not pass catching tight ends. They are all built up to go real severe. Maybe two tight ends on the field, maybe two running backs on the field at the same time, and they're going to try to bully the pretty boy teams of the AFC.
That is the Arthur Smith offense.
That's right. What they want to do. So if you're going to do that, then do it and put Justin Fields and make him an extra weapon. Because if they're that,
when you say make him the starting quarterback, or make him
the starting quarterback? Okay. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm with you that it's tracking, and based on the way Tomlin has approached and vets and maybe promises.
I'd be shell shocked, because I think Russell Wilson would have to flat out suck. And I honestly believe that when they talked, even though obviously Denver's paying a lot of the money, they were able to get Fields for a later round pick than they thought initially. These moves that are great now are being praised. They did fall in their lap. It's not like they wouldn't have paid Russell Wilson $40 million. I get it. However, I certainly do believe that Tomlin, he gave him the pole position line, if not more than that, when they talked. Probably said, as long as you don't suck, I'll give you week one. Then you can show me. Like, I would be really surprised. If he doesn't start week one, there's almost no point of him. There's almost no point of him then. He's not a guy who's going to be your coach on the field.
Completely hear you. But I also, though, do think that so much of what everybody's buying into, and the pole position line has carried a lot
it's
of
the same
weight.
Line everyone's saying. It's almost everybody like told everyone it. To say. Yeah.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Right.
Everybody keeps going with that one. Yeah. But maybe his value is, I keep using comportment, professional, how to operate and all that kind of stuff. That seems very important to this group. They keep talking about that. By the way, a lot of the publicity and Russell loves Pittsburgh, all of that is straight up Russell Wilson PR. Like, that's 100%. Him doing that. That has what value that has with the X's and O's and what happens at practice and between now and September, I think has.
Yeah, Dave, he did.
I do think it has a little bit, though. It has been a winsome campaign.
Yeah, I have a friend in Denver media, and he told me, we text all the time about this. This is what Russ does.
Right.
This is Russ's PR thing. This is why people in Denver thought he was corny and this is fake. This is why former players have said he's fake. This is him intentionally trying to be popular by going to all the concerts, taking pictures with everybody, talking about DeMar Hamlin, who's not even on the Steelers, even though he played at Pitt. Like, he's trying to ingratiate
himself. Hey, welcome to the team, man. Welcome to Pittsburgh. Hey, man, you just got here. What do you know?
He's trying.
You know where Fromantis is? I mean,
he's trying to ingratiate himself to the fans more than the team and more than the players on the team. That is why there's a belief that he's fake, etc. So that's all Russell
Imagine
Wilson.
Imagine the
can.
Conversations, too. Keep in mind how Russell Wilson comes to meet with Mike Tomlin and company. It's that we the way things broke last fall with Kenny and like what Seattle and was he going to there? Yeah. There's a way to operate when you're the man. And I really do think a lot of it is we need a vet to come in here and show we have a young team.
That's true.
I really think that it would not stun me on the level it seems it would stun a lot of you and a lot of people real close to it every day. I do allow for the possibility that that this, like, Russ is everything great about Pittsburgh. Like, he just got here, everybody.
Yeah, I mean,
and
I'm
he's
not going
perpetuating all this. Do you hear anybody on the team saying, like, well, obviously he's way better than Justin Fields? What I do hear from the people I talk to is Justin Fields, snap for snap, isn't showing the consistency. So if that's the issue, then obviously you can't go with Fields. But also, let's keep in mind, I know I keep playing cynic about Russ. And by the way, you will not hear me say bad about the human being, Russ. He goes to children's hospitals and visits sick kids, and that's lovely stuff.
I also think of what you're saying about the leadership. Even the harshest critics that believe he literally shouldn't even be in the league anymore have all said, when I've had him on shows, been on their shows, or just out there in the public, that what you're talking about, if you only want him as a leader and that's it, even if you think he's a backup now, the way he handled the Denver situation is an example of how to, like, to Kenny Pickett. That would have been an example to Pickett. Okay, you feel it's polarizing. You feel you're wronged. You feel you got all these college fans divided. This is how you handle it. Whereas he was told by a franchise to restructure his contract so they would be protected if he got hurt and wouldn't have to pay him. And instead of complaining about it and bitching and moaning about it, he just did a really somber press conference. I know about it. We'll talk about it in the offseason. Sean won before. I respect him. I'm sure at home he doesn't respect Sean Payton. He's probably MFing him. But to the media, he wants his perception to be positive. It's all about that.
This is exactly right.
But he handled himself professionally. In all of this. And I think Tomlin
and Khan were like, I don't think Khan cared as much because Kenny Pickett wasn't his draft pick. And that does matter. They're human beings after all. That was the other guys. And I know people struggle with that. So I'm not condescending. I legitimately, just because it's the same job for the same professional brand doesn't mean that they have they share the same thought process legitimately. Sure. I think Khan was like, guy who I didn't draft once ago, go. Justin Fields is fine. I do think that Tomlin was probably surprised. I think he was like, wait, you're leaving Kenny?
Yeah,
you're describing is exactly right. We're going to get Russ in here, and he's going to show him how to do it. And deep down, I hope Kenny Pickett uses this as motivation and by September reclaims the starting gig.
I think that is 100% the hope. And they could, and I think they were also telling him, look, bro, you were here for 2 years. You threw 13 TDs in 2 years. I get you had Kanda, and we didn't see more of you without Kanda. Just win the job in the offseason, shut these people up, and then go on.
I think that's what it was. And they're like,
what you did at Pitt does not work in the NFL. I think that's part of it, too. And I have heard from people that there was some entitlement there that I do buy into from Pickett. And I think part of that is, we mentioned Marino. Marino's been public in saying he was mad when he was not drafted by the Steelers, but in retrospect, he's happy he was not.
That was always my fear for Pickett, was that he was some sort of spiritual make good and had to carry all of that we should have taken Marino, but this kid will make it right for us now.
It's a lot to put on him. I think he really underestimated that playing for Pitt, everyone who's a Pitt fan is going to love you, especially when you win the ACC. Playing for the Steelers, as you know, they're not all Pitt fans. There's West Virginia fans, there's Penn State fans there. They're not going to care what you did at Pitt. They might even not like it. And separate from that, if you win a national title at Pitt and then you throw 13 TDs in 2 years at the Steelers fans don't give a damn. So
I get his frustration, though, because of the Canada and the timing of, wait, we just got rid of him, then I got hurt, then I had the tightrope surgery, and now I'm ready to come back. Like, wait, what? You're not – what, you think we're going to yank Mason Rudolph? Did you see him play last week?
Yeah, because we're
not sitting him down now. But the mistake was, who's really at fault, though? Yeah. The misread of, like, we're rolling with Trubisky. Imagine you're Kenny Pickett watching Trubisky put that stinker out there against the Patriots, a game you should have won, same as the Cardinals game, throwing away the season. You're frustrated, I got to get back out there and save this season because we were tracking towards the playoffs. Then Mason Rudolph fills your shoes and becomes the man in one game, in one drive, one throw to George Pickens against the Bengals when he breaks that short little little seam throw that Mason Rudolph, like first play of the game, takes it to the house. All of a sudden, everybody's chanting Mason Rudolph's name. Kenny Pickett's like, what the hell, man? I'm ready to come back in. But he was young and frustrated, and that was his mistake.
And we've all been immature. So I get it. But my point is that it's different now. And I do believe it's a little bit more of, I think there's more of a sense of urgency around the Steelers now from the Rooney on down, that they realize that the 2016 streak of not winning playoff games, they don't want Tomlin to get inducted in the Hall of Fame with not having won a playoff
game. My only point is this, though.
Go ahead.
Is that, yes, Russell Wilson, in the very short term, if you're nervous about whether or not Justin Fields is all the way up to speed on what Arthur Smith wants to do and can be closer to consistent than what he's been even in Chicago when he's had those electric moments, versus Russell Wilson, nice steady hand. Keep in mind, I keep making this point, 26-8 are the touchdown interception splits for Russ last year. But it keeps pointing, look how good he was at taking care of the ball. He also fumbled the ball away 8 times.
Yeah, so yeah, that's part of it. 16
turnovers in 15 games for Russ. That's not a steady hand, and he's not
there's guy turnovers he used there. To be.
Everybody understands. Justin Fields is the greater specimen. I would say start that clock now, because it also, you can make a case whatever Russ does this year does not carry over for the Steelers in 25. There's no math that you keep Russell Wilson in all likelihood. So it's going to have to be Justin Fields or someone else. So start that clock now with the kid who you might retain into the next season. It's kind of senseless if you think.
As we move off the Steelers, I hear that, but I think what we both said early in the show is why they're not going to do that. Because what they're going to tell you, Dave, is, you might be right for the long-term health of the franchise. We want to win now. So if you agree that Russell Wilson, even if there's more interceptions and turnovers, et cetera, than people give him credit for, there's certainly mistakes there. He was better last year than the year before, but he's not nearly what he was with Seattle and wouldn't even be there if it wasn't for as cheap as he is. There's more TDs. They haven't been explosive. They haven't been able to score. There's at least that. And if you agree that in week one, they have a better chance to win with Russell Wilson, even if they maybe in week seven would have a better chance with Justin Fields, Mike Tomlin wants the best chance to win week one in week one. He doesn't want to punt week one for the betterment of 2025. Like they are now a little bit pressure to win now.
And that's how they kind of always accept that if you contextualize, not just the way the winning teams are going now. Look at what Josh Allen and the Bills did a year ago. That wasn't by choice that they had to scratch and claw to get into the playoffs. But more and more, you're seeing these teams finding their way, finding their game. It's almost an NBA thing. If you kind of think about the way NBA teams talk about as they gel together the individual pieces, and it's all building towards the playoffs. More and more NFL teams are abiding by that model. It's not a new thing that NFL players will tell you, like, the season doesn't really start until Thanksgiving, and then it ratchets up another level come playoffs and so on. The Steelers ain't in a position to just sort of muddle their way through to find themselves. They're a team that has to take every win they can possibly get so that they're playoff relevant. Completely hear that. But are they ultimately better with Russ scratching out games? Because it does sound like Justin Fields, they're going to hide the quarterback. They're going to try to do a 21st century version of hiding the quarterback, sort of like the Jags did with Blake Bortles. You're not going to have a guy like carrying the day. He's going to be running a lot of under center, play action kind of stuff, safe-ish throws. So why not go with Justin Fields? Because if you have to pull the plug on Russ, that means things aren't going well. And if you have to try and find another option with that back half of the schedule, like, you're going to wind up with nothing.
Yeah. And the schedule won't be easy. And of course, if Russ starts, you're not going to see Fields unless they're losing games, which no fan wants them to do. I do think the odds are that Russ starts the season and Fields finishes it and they win 9 games, lose right away in the playoffs, and don't go anywhere again. That's where the money is probably, which is what death taxes and the Steelers have been doing. And Tomlin will be there for it in the future. And it's even possible that Fields and Wilson are both not there in 2025 because Fields will need a new deal as well. And if he's not lighting the world on fire, they might go cheap there and say, we got to go back in the draft. So you just don't know. None of this is locked in, but it'll be interesting the rope that they have with Wilson. If they lose games 1 and 2, or even if they win, but he's not playing well and Fields is better in practice, what do they do? I imagine if they're winning, they stick with him. And I'll tie it in that, yes, they finally did get smarter in the draft. I think they had a great draft. They're finally building the trenches like they weren't doing when they drafted Najee and other pieces. They're finally doing that. And to your chagrin, they're doing it with a Mountaineer, who I think is the one locked in to be there for the future. I think Zach Frazier is going to be great.
I'm agnostic. I was cheering for Franco Harris, the Nittany Lion, and Jack Ham before I knew what. So, yes.
No, I get it. I just find that funny.
If Jeff Hostetler were the QB and he took him to the Super Bowl, I would have cheered for that dude, even though I remember him running the ball into the end zone down there in Morgantown against Fogerino and company back in 83. That's
how it should be, Dave. That obviously, that once you get to the pros, it shouldn't matter what happened in college, but unfortunately that's not the world we're living in. What I do want to touch on before I let you go here, maybe I'll get your quick pirate thoughts as well, but I do want to ask you about, you put up Oilers versus Penguins, Oilers in the Cup Finals, the Penguins not there, but certainly have been there tons throughout their franchise history, certainly since I've been alive, and many Hall of Famers and legends have played for these two franchises, been a part of these Cup Final teams, been a part of these championships, obviously Gretzky, Messier, etc., Grant Fuhr on the Oilers side, Yager, Lemieux, etc., Marc-Andre Fleury, Barrasso, the list can go on and on, Malkin Crosby currently on the Penguins side. So I'll ask you, which one of these two teams, all-time Cup Final representative teams for the Oilers and Penguins, both with five franchise Stanley Cups, the Penguins last in 2017, the Oilers last in 1990, unless they come back and win this series, do you think is better, and how did you get down to these being the two teams? Were there any other teams considered to join this?
Well, to me, that was really the heart of it, and a lot of people outside of Pittsburgh came at me and said, why would you bring this up? The Penguins have nothing. They didn't even make the playoffs. Why would you bring this up? Legitimately, here's why. Because it's the Edmonton Oilers. If it were a rando team who had little Cup Final history or any cups in their past, it is a moot conversation. But as a reminder, in 1984, I remember in October, but my mother calling, dinner's ready, please come in here, and my sister Amy and I saying, like, wait, we got to see this guy Lemieux's first shift, we hear, like, he's gonna give us a cup. And I remember watching him in Boston and stealing the puck off the tape of reigning Norris Trophy champion Raymond Bork and coming in on reigning Vezina Trophy champion Pete Peters and whipping them both and scoring on the backhand. And we danced around the living room and we said, we're going to win the Stanley Cup. And seven short years later, we did. And then won another one. But really, from 91 to now, the dominant team, the team that rises above all others in the NHL, is the Pittsburgh Penguins. That's hard to believe.
Yeah, give or take the next generation, but sure. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, right.
Overall, yes. Overall.
And by the way, I also think that it does make sense to, much as I say, you know, Super Bowl, a good clean starting point for NFL history is the Super Bowl era. And then there are those inflection points after that, the Mel Blount rule, free agency, and so on.
Yeah, the sack record
that changed the game.
Right.
The good starting point for the NHL, as far as I'm concerned, is 79-80 when they bring four more teams in and flesh out the league a little bit. I mean, you have the original six, then when the Pens come in 67, it doubles up, but you're kind of dealing with a very limited scale for a league. So anyway, so that's when Gretzky and everybody in Quebec and Hartford get into the league, and Winnipeg make the league and really flesh it out as a major league. So let's start the clock there. Like you say, the Pens have their cups, the Oilers have theirs, a cavalcade of stars on both sides. So I thought it was a worthy time to stop down and figure it out. I think that the Penguins are stronger down the middle, which is saying something when you have Messier as your third line center if you're the Oilers, but the Penguins have Geno Malkin as their third line center and Ronnie Francis as their fourth line center, and his wingers are Chris Kunitz and Rick Tocchet. Beat that, Edmonton Oilers. You can't. Now, on the blue line, it's kind of moot because every game in this series is going to be 13-12.
You're going to score a lot of goals. Yeah.
Even though you have, Grant Fuhr, I'm sorry, Billy Ranford, you're probably not going to find yourself between the pipes at any point in this 7-game series. Grant Fuhr in front of you. Flower versus Barrasso is more of a debate. Spoiler alert.
You might get both goalies in based on how the Penguins do it. And in some of those cups, you might actually see both goalies.
Yeah. But I'm gonna, you know, what do you think I'm gonna do? Obviously, I'm gonna take 66 and company, the greatest okay. player in the history of people. And by the way, the Pittsburgh Penguins centerman stand. I don't know if this counts as a hot take on my way out, but Lakers centers, Yankees right field, you know, Boston Red Sox left fielders, Packers quarterbacks, Niners quarterbacks, Dodgers starting pitchers, if I didn't say that one. But above all, Pittsburgh Penguins centers.
Yeah, Lemieux, it doesn't get brought up enough, but yeah, it's Lemieux, about legends.
Malkin, right? Francis, two of the top four players in the history of the game, Crosby in 66, plus Brian Trottier spent a couple of years, won the cup, Jordan Staal won those guys. The greatest of all time. I'm taking the Penguins, and you better say that too, or else I'm hanging up on you right now.
Now, I would take the Penguins in this exercise. I do think it's obviously incredibly close and would be a 7-game series, and I wouldn't be shocked at all if the Oilers would win it. I do think what's interesting about the Oilers' tenure that did not occur with the Penguins, because obviously you have the two early 90s Cups, Jágr and Lemieux did it together. Then you have Crosby and Malkin staying together. People forget. It's not even brought up when he's on TV because it's a ding that no one wants to bring up. The Oilers won a cup 2 years after Gretzky. They won a cup without him, with Messi as a leader. Messi has six. He won two without Gretzky. Gretzky got in one final but didn't win without him. So he did. The Jordan Pippen thing happened where Pippen won.
Did Pippen win one without Jordan? That's exactly right. I literally said that same sentence yesterday. That's exactly right.
Pippen
got close.
The biggest
knock on Gretzky is ultimate guy. He was the greatest play ever. Look at what he did. Like, I guess the rest of the team was pretty good. Witness the fact they won the cup without him.
Right. I mean, again, obviously Gretzky is very, very good. He has more assists than some Hall of Famers have points. You could certainly argue him having been the most accomplished if you want to go greatest that way. But at the end of the day, they did win without him. They didn't really miss him in the trade. He missed them more than they missed him. And Pippen got close with the Blazers, etc. But imagine the history, how the history books would say if the Blazers held on and beat the Lakers and he got to an NBA Finals without Jordan. It happened in hockey with Messier winning two with two different franchises after Gretzky. So I think that's a
what
big
deal. What if
Matt
Cassel had taken the Patriots to the Super Bowl the year that he had the knee injury? What if,
That would be the same thing that's used against Belichick now. The only thing I do want to bring up to you that I think is not brought up in this, because I've heard this from others. It's always Oilers versus Penguins, the two with five. Penguins more recently, the Oilers have, you know, that clump of 80s and
you're
going to
go
90s.
With the Lightning.
I could. No, I'm the only other franchise, and you kind of fixed it a little bit by saying you're starting from 79 on. That probably hurts me in this argument. I think the Red Wings absolutely deserve to be in this. If you're talking about the history of that franchise, a lot of original six franchises have disappointed, but overall, they have 11 cups, and they do have four in modern memory. So this is not like the Maple Leafs and those that won them all back then. This isn't even like Boston that has one in the last 40 years. They have four. They've been in the cup final a few other times. They owned a decade. They had Hall of Famers galore. You're talking Yzerman, Lindstrom, Dominic Hasek played there. He could be your goalie if you don't want to go Swastik.
That's a good one, because I was just thinking where you really struggle as a big drop off is if you're going with Chris Osgood between the pipes.
But you could go Hasek if you're just saying had to play there.
Okay.
Osgood was there longer, but you could go Hasek. He won one as a starter. No, two. It wasn't just like the backup cup. So you could go Dominic Hasek. If you go him, is that a problem? Because that would be a difference maker potentially in net. Fedorov, I mean, you could go down the line. Brendan Shanahan. There are a lot of Hall of Famers there. And, of course, Gordie Howe, if we're going back into history. Ted Lindsay.
Yeah, okay, Lindstrom's a better defenseman than anyone that the Pens or Oilers will throw
if
out
you,
there.
If you go prior to 79, you're including Howe, you're including Ted Lindsay. If you go throughout the full history of the league and not just 79 on, I think the Red Wings actually might even be number one here. If you go 79 on, they're probably two or three, but they're in this conversation.
That's a fun one, but I do think that it belongs in I think it plays as a semi-hot take. And by the way, the Bruins might also be better than the Habs. That
they
the dominant team
modern
is
day.
Blue Blanc et Rouge win all those cups in the 25 years. It is one of the craziest
Yeah, you could go Montreal too, but they haven't. They haven't done only the '93.
Well, no, I think what's interesting is that the Wings probably beat the Habs all time rosters, even though the Habs were winning all those cups in the 25 years of the original six.
Yeah, yeah. The Red Wings have 11 cups. They were in the final, I believe, 24 times. They lost to Montreal like 10 of those times, and they had a better. Yeah, they had Howe. Howe has four, but he lost like a Jerry West spread.
Well, you know why that is, right? One of the many fascinating things about a professional sports league that had a total of six teams in it, obviously, which is the best. It's just the best that was happening, and people were consumed by it. It wasn't like it was some fringy thing. People loved it.
I
think a lot of people aren't aware of this. First of all, 25 years this went on. This wasn't like, oh, that was a weird little transitional period for a couple of years. No. A quarter century this went on. And the Rangers were irrelevant. The Bruins a little less so. The Wings didn't win a ton. Toronto was good. Wonder why why did the Habs win all those cups in those years? Because you had negotiating rights with people from within, I think it was a 50-mile radius of your town. So, of course, all the best players were French-Canadian around Montreal. That's why they won all those cups, and that's why the Rangers never did anything, because who was playing hockey in New York City in 1959? Nobody is the answer.
Yeah. Yeah, you could argue it's almost a real testament and kind of amazing the Red Wings actually you are certainly the second greatest original
because they're right there
franchise
by Regina, right?
They're close, but like they were letting a lot of the players come to America. They are not a Canadian franchise, and they're absolutely the second greatest original six. Yep. And you could argue they certainly had more modern day. And yeah, once that dissipated, and this is before the cap, and you could start paying, the Red Wings came to be a dynasty, and Montreal tapered off. Yeah, so that's also part of it too. But I think Detroit is not in that conversation enough. If we're going all history, and you can include Hossack,
that's fine.
That is hard to then say that they don't get in there. They would have by far the best defenseman for me. Oh, but
who are the Habs going to put between the pipes though? Patty Waugh or Ken Dryden? That's going to be
Of course Montreal certainly is there too. Dave, I appreciate the time for sure. I want you to get me out of here with this. Where is your excitement level for the Paul Skeens era? You get Libby Dunn at games. Obviously, there's more national media that are caring about this and caring what the Pirates do. But they're losing a lot of games still, including last night, even to bad teams. It certainly doesn't look like they're a contender right now, even though some thought they could get there. They have a young rotation separate from just Skeens. Does this make you happy about the future? Are you really excited when you see them on ESPN and you see the highlights and they're talking about Skeens and Libby Dunn? Or are you sitting there saying, but they're not really that good?
Oh, no. My default setting in life has always been glass half full, but the last 5 years or 10 years have somehow turned me into the pie-eyed Pittsburgh sports optimist compared to the vast majority of the population. I think this is great times. The window is open for 5 years. I don't want them to do anything drastic that will disrupt that. And first of all, the rationalization that I have come up with is, well, the Nuttings own the team, and who you can't support them so long as the Nuttings are involved. People I refer you to the cinema classic Major League. The ownership in that movie hated the team and was trying to make them lose so that they could sell them off and make more money. That's similar to what the Nuttings are trying to do, not trying to sell them off, but they're just trying to reap financial benefit from it. The players resented. They hated the owner, and they won to spite the owner. Let's treat the Buccos that way, everybody. That's all. We're supporting the players, not the ownership.
Yeah.
And the way they're lined up, man, with Solomato on the way and Bubba Chandler and Jared Jones and Cannon Paul Skeens and Keller in betweens, that is borderline going to be a dominant rotation. I know everybody has forecasted injuries. It does seem like young pitchers that it does take down about half the available guy. You know,
they won't sign a second deal. All of that's already been said that they're only going to be there for a while. It'll be the Garrett Cole thing again.
You get a 5-year window, and do they need to do the like the Yankees of the late 90s? No. If they can have one magical run that claims a World Series, I know that's asking a great deal, but if they can do that just once in these next five seasons, and they're really going to be wired to do it, here comes Tamar Johnson. Let's hope Henry Davis can find his stroke. Look at the O'Neill Cruz, Brian Reynolds. They are going to have enough offense when those guys ripen a little bit collectively. And in the meantime, the pitching staff is going to be an advantage no matter who they're up against going right. forward, especially by this time next year. And they're bringing up underneath Cannon, Paul Skeens and company, those young arms that I mentioned. They're loaded up now, maybe in spite of themselves. Maybe there have been some bad moves there, but I, you know, what's my optimism level? 10. I'm at a 10, Yins.
Wow. Wow. I think they're still a couple years away, but everything you're saying is true. There's a reason to believe when you have a rotation like that, when you have young pitchers like that, that can win any given start, that if you're in the playoffs, you can start them in game one. You can feel comfortable about game three. You don't have to worry about tinkering the rotation because all these guys can pitch. I get it. Oddly enough, they haven't been getting enough offense when they were supposed to be fine offensively. Strength. You figure those guys will start hitting eventually. They will have a window, but as we all do know, and maybe even her being a personality and Libby Dunn and his girlfriend and with Paul Skeens and their mind being more than just baseball, which is fine for an athlete these days, it's going to be hard for Libby Dunn and Paul Skeens to say no to the Dodgers and a $200 million plus payroll that is going to offer them big money.
Listen, when's that? 2038? Yeah, when Owen Pickering finally arrives on the Penguins? Yeah. I mean, I can't worry about what's that far down the line.
Yeah, but if you do win with you do the 2013 thing and then actually get a pennant out of it. They at least got a run with Cole. If you get that run, then be happy with that run. That run could happen.
Playoffs. The only thing in the Buccos' way, the only thing really in the Buccos' way of any good a team that's got that depth of pitching is the stupid bring in more fans playoff structure. If it were back 20 years ago, I would be bullish on the Buccos' chances. And by the way, in the here and now in 2024, who do you think the Milwaukee Brewers are? That division is a junk division. The Brewers are the one standout team. True. There's nothing to say that the Buccos can't who you think the Brewers are, who's so so daunting that the Bucks can't reel them in. They just got to right the ship a little bit. They're close, everybody, and I don't mean 2025. I think it's plausible they could reel off. Like, they could have one of those 12 out of 15 stretches there and be right in the mix there and at least get a wild card.
There's a team that does it every year, and if you're looking at either the talent now, certainly in the rotation, or even the future, in the division, just the division, you could absolutely certainly argue the Pirates have the most reason for optimism just on the roster alone in the division. They haven't been playing like it, but you'd rather have talent that's underachieving that you could figure will turn it around than to not have talent there. And I think this is a benefit too. You're in LA. If you go to the street and say, name me somebody on the Pittsburgh Pirates, maybe some can name Paul Skeens. You'll get some other players. If you say those same people, name me somebody in the Milwaukee Brewers, they're going to, I don't know who's on that team. So the casual fan that maybe is just, they tune in whenever the playoffs start and they're more interested maybe in media. They know some Pirate players now. They didn't know them 2 years ago, outside of maybe McCutcheon when he came back.
Well, the great thing that's going to be, you know, that picture of Aaron Judge standing next to Jose Altuve. And I always am fascinated by the fact that those two creatures are the same species, let alone have the same profession. Remarkable. Yeah. How cool is it going to be when O'Neill Cruz is standing next to 5'7" Tamar Johnson, 6'7" versus 5'7". And that's going to be the double play combo for the Buccos going forward.
That'll be a funny image for sure. Get your poster for that one. But yeah, there's reason for optimism. I'm pumping the brakes on it happening right now, but I think Livy Dunn and all of that is definitely good for the marketability of the franchise, for other free agents coming in, for maybe even trying to convince them to stay if that ever happens, even though the money will be elsewhere. And right now there is a window. And you could certainly argue it didn't start yet because they just got here. So say the window starts in 2 years, you could have that 2013, 2015 run. And then once you get in, maybe you win a series or two, unlike that tenure. So if you get a pennant out of it or get a World Series, which I'm not predicting, but if that happens and then you suck for a few years because Skeens leaves, I don't think Pirate fans are going to be mad. You're going to be
2015 Royals model. That's the goal.
Yeah, they can always brag they won a championship in recent memory, even though
we will live off of that. I can assure you.
Yeah, that'll work out.
Sports fans, you will bask in the glow of one World Series championship for at least 25 years if you get it. It is the standard is not with these Pirates. Like, how many can they win? If they win one and then go 40 and 122 for the next 20 years, that'll be fine by me.
Yeah, one championship for the Pirates or even getting to the World Series, one World Series experience for the Pirates.
That's it.
That'll be, obviously it's a Steelers town forever. It's a football town forever. But that'll be more than any Stanley Cups or Lombardi trophies could be after all these years since 79 and all those losing seasons in the mist there. So that'll be treated differently. And the Pirate fan that has always been around for all of that will potentially be the loudest of all. Like, that'll be a different experience. Not every championship is created equal. That one will live forever. That'll be a 2006 Cavaliers.
I hate to be dark, but Dave Parker, the Cobra, is not going to live forever. So let's get him in the Hall of Fame while he's still here to enjoy it. The Cobra 39 Blooms is perhaps the human being on the planet Earth still around who deserves to be in his sports Hall of Fame more than anyone else out there. Let's get him in here now. It's jive that he ain't in there.
You can't even, if you're a voter, you can't even say that there's a controversy or a steroid cloud or any of that stuff. This is just off the numbers we're talking.
I think it's because I think that residents of Mount Pius who have Hall of Fame votes keep them out because of the schmutz, because of the cocaine and the pirate.
Well, you could go cocaine,
that kind of stuff.
I'm talking about PEDs, but you could go cocaine.
My point is, it's moot. Move on. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. Get over yourselves.
I do agree, and I study things like that. You may not see the 500 home runs. You may not see single season records. You may not see 3,500 hits. But if you look at the totality of the numbers, analytically speaking, whether you're going to war or even just on the traditional numbers, that black ink that people always point to on Baseball Reference, it does point to him being a Hall of Famer.
That's
it's
right.
All there.
Best player in baseball for half a decade. That's enough for me. Put him
and
in
on
the
good
already.
Teams with multiple franchises, and he was a personality. And I don't know if you can tell the story of the game in that era without him. And it's a museum, and he definitely makes sense.
Let's go.
Not the steroid cloud, even though there's maybe some other things. So if you're calming down on certain things, I think it definitely makes sense. I think this is the time you've seen players get put in that maybe had similar spreads.
Pops and I both vote yes. Get the Cobra in now.
I definitely think he deserves it. And now that we're seeing players that were not put in for so many years, even though they didn't have a steroid cloud, like say a Fred McGriff, that are now I think it makes sense for Dave Parker. So if all the bobbleheads agree, why not? Dave, I appreciate the time. Bobby Brister.
Fathead guy agrees.
Samashek joining me here on Mic Drop, longtime TV writer and, of course, current host of Minus Three podcast. Dave, I appreciate it, man. Tune into his show. Subscribe to his show again, the Minus Three podcast. And we'll definitely have to do this again sometime.
Good times, Pally.
Dave Demichek. Credits to his name include The Man Show, include working with Jimmy Kimmel, include Crank Yankers, and Zoe Yana. I don't want to get controversial with those names and those figures for what that was then. I did grow up with those shows. Different era back then, and Dave was writing for those shows. Dave also now again is a co-host for the Minus Three podcast, so he's kind of been involved in sports media where I am, and also outside of that on the entertainment side as a TV writer, also a former host with Fox Sports Radio, was able to go through the Pittsburgh circuit there, talk about some current news topics, some polarizing topics, and of course end on where he is with the Pirates and his excitement there. He's a Pittsburgh sports fan in the midst of all of that, and he's more optimistic than I think a lot of you, a lot of us, a lot of others, but it's nice to see that because there's a reason for it now that maybe wasn't there in the past. We also, of course, talked about, for anyone who wants to rewind, Tomlin, the QB situation, the Steelers, the perception, what Art Rooney II said to start this offseason, how it was different from before, and then compared the Penguins, Oilers, all-time cup teams, and I brought up the Red Wings, who I think Dave admitted maybe should be in that conversation. Maybe should be in that conversation all time in terms of cup teams, 100%. Again, you should subscribe to this episode. Everywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Google Play, TuneIn, etc. You can also find Mic Drop available on the Believe Network. And you can also find me on social media at MikeOsti11, everywhere on social, X, Threads, etc. You can also find a lot of our Believe shows throughout the SiriusXM family of networks and on SiriusXM as well. So again, that'll do it for this edition of Mic Drop here made possible by Believe. Thanks again to Dave Demichek for joining me on this show. Hit up our subscribe button. Listen to this program, download it, comment on it. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you thought of what Dave had to say, what I had to say, who's right, who's wrong, who's an idiot, why you know more than us, even though you probably don't. And we'll catch you again for another episode of Mic Drop on Believe.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.